Blog Talk Radio.
My old man said no.
And we are live for Fan for Racing NASCAR and Race Talk. This is Monday night, April the 3rd, once again, we have a big show lined up for our listeners tonight. Now, tonight, we will have in our winner's circle some post-race audio from Chase Elliott, Maurice Gallagher, and Joey Cohen, the crew chief, after Chase Elliott won the Camping World Truck Series race at Martinsville Speedway this weekend. Then at 9 o'clock, we will have a live guest. Gus Dean will be joining us from the ARCA Racing Series. He races with Wintron Racing, and he will be here to help us preview their upcoming Music City 200 at Fairground Speedway Nashville this weekend. So we'll have a lot to talk about with Gus Dean during our 9 o'clock half hour. Then at 9:30, we also have some post-race audio from the win from Brad Keselowski. He won the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series on Sunday, and the post-race audio will include commentary from Brad Keselowski, his crew chief Paul Wolf, and, of course, the team owner Roger Penske. So that's what we have to look forward to. Of course, joining me shortly will be our co-host, Sal Segala. I'm hoping he'll be able to be on the show here. And Sal and I will give you our highlights from the weekend of racing at Martinsville Speedway. And there was quite a bit of racing between the Camping World Truck Series. It was great to see them back on track after being off for about a month or so. It was good to see them back in racing. And Martinsville always puts on a great race for the Camping World Truck Series. As I mentioned, Chase Elliott won that race, and that was pretty exciting to watch. He had a pretty commanding performance there, although he did fall back a couple of times. The race was really a good race. And coming in second there, at Martinsville in the Camping World Truck Series was another champion, Johnny Sauter, who we know as a veteran in the Camping World Truck Series. He came in second, followed by Christopher Bell, who put on a good show. And how about Noah Gregson finishing fourth in that Camping World Truck Series? He's a Rookie of the Year contender, and he had a great showing at Martinsville. Finishing in the fifth place was Ty Dillon, that was a great finish for him as well. So it was a great race. There was a lot of breakout performances there. Harrison Burton was racing that race. He raced at Martinsville last fall and came back to race that track again this spring. He finished 13th place in his number 51 Dex Imaging Toyota. So Harrison Burton had a good showing for coming back at Martinsville. Ross Chastain, who's been racing in the trucks in his number 66 car, finished 7th. Brett Moffitt, 6th, followed by Timothy Peters in 8th, and then Matt Crafton, another champion in the Camping World Truck Series, and Ryan Truex came home with a 10th place finish. So that was pretty fantastic in the Camping World Truck Series. I know Sal and I will have a lot to talk about when it comes to the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. That was a pretty exciting race to watch, and I think on both counts, I think we're kind of showing that the stage racing is really making the racing a lot more exciting to watch. And we definitely saw that in both of these races this weekend. Now, in the Monster Energy race this weekend, it turns out that Brad Keselowski won that race. He really raced hard with Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott. and did a good job of being in the right place at the right time to finish that race in first place. Again, Kyle Busch was second. Chase Elliott, another great run by him, finished third. Joey Logano came up. He raced through the field to finish fourth. Austin Dillon rounds out the top five at Martinsville in the Cup Series. Now, in the next five positions, we had A.J. Allmendinger. That was a great race for him. Clint Bowyer finishing seventh, Matt Kenseth ninth, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Was able to pull off a top 10 finish. So hopefully that will be kind of a topic of conversation. I know there was a lot of conversation and discussion about the way that he raced Kyle Busch when Kyle Busch was about to put him a lap down. And it really was kind of an interesting conversation about that, and I'm going to get Sal's thoughts about that here in just a minute. I know we have an article on fanforracing.com about it, but I want to hear what Sal has to say. Sal, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Sherrod. I was in the queue for forever. I thought you were never going to let me in.
Oh, well, I was looking for you, and I just happened to go off to send a message to you, and that's when I guess you must have shown up. Okay,
yeah, no,
so Sal.
It's weird. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right, no, I'm here, so let's roll.
Oh, okay. So we were just talking about Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and the conversation around Kyle Busch and Ricky Stenhouse. When Ricky Stenhouse was going a lap down, he was racing Kyle Busch very hard not to go a lap down. Of course, Kyle Busch wanted to get past him, and Ricky kind of made it an interesting proposition there. He made it well known that he wanted to keep that position. I know Kyle Busch says there's payback coming. And a lot of people can see both sides of that coin, in that nobody really did anything wrong. They both had a right to race for their positions. What are your thoughts there, Sal?
Yeah, you know what? I was watching it. I seen it. They replayed on NASCAR America. And actually, Kyle Busch didn't say he was going to be the one giving it back. He said that somewhere down the line that he was going to get it from somebody.
Right,
you know,
right.
But that's what I said.
He just said there's payback coming. Yeah, and not necessarily from Kyle Busch. He just knows that payback's coming.
But Kyle Busch says that all the time. And you know what? When does payback ever come? Never. I mean, seriously, one of these guys, the only ones that ever paid back was Carl Edwards. When you think about it.
So do you want that to be, are you chalking that up to just heat of the moment conversation?
It's heat of the moment, yeah. A lot of it's heat of the moment. You know what? I mean, Kyle Busch and Joey Logano got into it in Daytona or whatever, and they've raced side by side every single race, and they've gave each other the room that they've needed. You know what?
We did see Matt Kenseth give some paid back at Martinsville a year ago.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, it just depends who the driver is. Kyle ain't going to give – I don't know. But anyways, getting back to the reason, I think Ricky had a good reason why he was staying up there, you know, why he did what he did. But then in the same run, you know, you could see, you know, Kyle's frustration because of that. He lost the stage win, you know, which when they're breaking down the points, you know, you really had to watch and see how important these stage points, you know, are going to play at the end of the season, you know, and that's, I could see Kyle getting frustrated, but he also has to put himself in Ricky's shoes, you know, is that, you know, when the stage is over, you know, and they restart the race, you know, Ricky didn't want to be a lap down, you know, and you know what, and they made a good point, you know, one of the commentators said, you know, maybe if this is going to happen, maybe what they need to do is stop the race, make everybody come in, and then restart the race again, you know, instead of letting them come in and pit or do whatever they want to keep the race going. You know what? If you're going to do a stage, it's going to be like a heat race. The heat race is over. you reset the field, you know, you get the field back out there again, you know what, and you restart the race. You know, I mean, if this happens more than once, it might be something that NASCAR might want to look into. You know,
right.
I'm not saying
and
they have to or they
the
are,
beginning.
But...
We've said that from the beginning, Sal, that we expect tweaks to be coming.
Yeah.
With the new stage racing. But I think what it did show is that it does bring intensity to the racing that we have not seen before. And I think that's a good thing for race fans. So we've got a reason to watch all three stages of the race at a track like Martinsville. So it does make it more exciting. Now, what about the Camping World Truck Series race? Chase Elliott won that race, and that was pretty exciting, too. He also won, I think it was stage two of that race, but it didn't come easy.
No, he had to fight for it. You know, he had to battle for it, you know what? And, you know, once again, you know, it was good racing. You know what? I was trying to get Noah Gregson on the show today, you know, to talk
mm-hmm.
about his perspective, because he got to see, 60, 70, 80 laps of it, you know, from his vantage point, you know, riding third, you know, riding second, riding third, you know, then finally riding fourth, you know, and, you know, once again, you know, it was another good, it was another good race, another good battle. You know what, the Truck Series continues to prove week in and week out, you know, that it is, you know, the series, you know, you really want to watch.
Absolutely, and I thought that was a great run by Noah Gregson. He's contending for Rookie of the Year this year in the Camping World Truck Series, and a fourth-place finish, I think, is his best finish so far this season. And I know it's only two races, but that was a great finish for him.
Oh, yeah, it was a great confidence booster, you know what, and I think his crew chief made a great call. I don't know, it was 30 or 40,
mm-hmm.
something like that, laps to go, you know, and he told Noah, he says, you know, let Sauter, you know, go by, he's a faster truck. You know, we're looking
mm-hmm.
at the bigger picture, you know, is you finishing a race, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think that was a great call, you know, let Sauter go by, you know, and give Noah, you know, that fourth place finish, you know, which, you know, was like a win. You know, I mean, they needed it. It was something, you know, that was, you know, it wasn't, you know, they needed that. They needed a good finish. He needed a good top five finish, and he got it, you know.
And he got it.
Exactly, and he got it. You know, he earned it. You know, he raced hard for it.
He sure did, and that was really great to watch. Again, I think the stage racing has made the racing even better. And we've said for a long time, Sal, that the best racing in NASCAR is in the Camping World Truck Series. But I don't know. With stage racing, I think it's made the other two series exciting to watch as well. Now, I do have some post-race audio here.
You know,
did you have something more
real
to
quick,
add?
Going back to Chase Elliott, I mean, man, he's like a Kyle Busch jumping in other series, you know, and winning races. You know, it's just a matter of timing before he wins a race, and you know, the Monster Energy Company, he's becoming really, really close, and you know, he has come around a lot this season.
He really has, and I think even though the dynamics are a lot different between racing a truck and racing a cup car, I think that the confidence boost that it gives a driver like Chase Elliott to then compete the next day in the Cup Series is huge. And you know what? These young drivers, drivers like Noah Gregson and some of the other new drivers that are racing in the series, they learn a lot from drivers like Chase Elliott racing in that track. So it's always a good thing. I do have some post-race audio from Chase Elliott, Maurice Gallagher, who is the team owner, and Elliott's crew chief, Joey Cohen. I won't play the whole thing because we won't have time to do that, but I will play some parts here, and then you and I can talk on the other side, Sal.
Okay.
Okay, if I could have your attention here in the media center, we are now joined by today's race-winning team of the Alpha Energy Solutions 250 in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. We're joined by race winner Chase Elliott, driver of the number 23 Allegiant Airlines Napa Chevrolet for GMS Racing. We have crew chief Joey Cohen and team owner Maury Gallagher Jr. Now, let's start with you, Chase. Yesterday, you came in here and you said you didn't quite have your head wrapped around this place here at Martinsville. Do you feel a little differently about the paperclip now?
No, not really, to be honest with you. Definitely not for tomorrow. We had our struggles this afternoon and kind of came into this race a little frustrated with that. So just trying to think throughout. I mean, even having, you know, we had a great truck today, had a little help from our friends there in the latter stage of the race to give us the lead back. But regardless, had a fast truck, but I still think there's a couple things I'm not doing fundamentally correctly for tomorrow. And I kind of see it. I just got to figure out how to do it. So we'll see.
Okay. Joey, you rolled off the truck with a lot of speed today. And, you know, starting from the pull, how nervous as a crew chief do you get knowing that you have such a strong truck, maintaining that speed throughout the course of the entire race?
Yeah, I think guys like Chase sitting here make it pretty easy to kill your nerves. I mean, a lot of talent there for sure. But, you know, the main thing was I knew we had speed. It was just basically trying to dictate the strategy for the race. And segments are obviously a lot different now, trying to determine that. We had a discussion about short pitting one of the segments earlier. Didn't, you know, kind of thought it was the wrong decision at the time.
I thought it was the wrong decision.
And he let me know, which
but
is
it
cool.
Worked out. Yeah. It was good.
I, pure honesty from him, perfect. But, you know, just more nervous about the strategy and trying to keep the track position all day. Once you get the pole, we got the pit stall. That worked out perfect. Then you just try and keep your track position all day.
More, it was clear that, you know, the 23 and the 21 both had a lot of speed today. Both of your trucks, how nervous does that make you seeing those two trucks battle for the lead throughout the entire race?
Well, on a relative basis, are you nervous when you've got the first two trucks in the business? So, yeah, nervous, but a good nervous. You know, having talent like Johnny and Chase, it's just a great tribute to their talents, but also to the guys that set these vehicles up, Mike Beam, his team, Joey, you know, Joe Shear. They've done a terrific job, and they've built really good stuff, which you have to have here. I mean, as good as these good drivers are, you have to have the stuff coming out of the shop, and I want to really thank all the guys back at the shop for their efforts. Well, 2-year period, we've come a long way, and couldn't be prouder of all the people involved.
Okay, we'll open the floor for.
Okay, Sal, that was all three parties there, Chase Elliott, Maurice Gallagher, and Joey Cohen, talking about their immediate thoughts right after winning in the Camping World Truck Series at Martinsville this weekend. I thought it was interesting. Well, first of all, I want to say I agree with Maurice Gallagher. It's amazing how far GMS Racing has come in a 2-year period with their organization. They've got some superstars really developing there.
Yeah, they do. You know what? And it's true. They have come a long way. You know, and you know, you look across the board at, you know, some of the other teams out there too. You know what? And they're starting to realize, you know, that, you know, you have to make. You know, you got to make some changes in the off season. You know, some you have to take big swings, some you could take, you know, smaller swings. But the thing is you know, you can't be afraid, you know, to take a swing, you know what, and hire a driver, you know, of a caliber, you know, I mean, per se as a Chase Elliott. I mean, not that he's the best out there, but, you know, he's one of the up and coming drivers, you know, and he is a driver, you know, that everybody is, you know, is. You know, they're going to be talking about him, you know, for a long time.
And the drivers are going to be watching him because he's having success. And as you said, it's just a matter of time before we see that happening in the Cup Series as well. And then I thought it was also interesting when they talked about the strategy plays. You know, drivers and crew chiefs alike are a little unsure right now how all these stage races are going to play out with strategy. And Chase made it well known he didn't agree with the crew chief's call, with Joey Cohen's call, but he acknowledged that it worked out in the end.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? And you know what? And that's what crew chiefs want to hear. You know, they don't always want to be sure. They always want to be right, and, you know, know that they're making the right calls. You know what? But you got to remember that the end result is your driver has to be comfortable with you. You know, and he has to be comfortable with the calls you make, you know, and some of the calls he makes, you know, might not be, you know, the call that he agrees with. And most drivers won't say it publicly, you know, so for Chase to say it publicly during a press conference, you know, that, you know, that's kind of, that you can kind of put on the fans, because I know there was a lot of fans that were, that were kind of complaining, that, Chase is too, he doesn't show any emotion, and he's
well,
always
right
down
there
on himself. Yeah, he's always down on himself, And even some of the teams that he drove for, said, that Chase, he's too hard on himself. But, right there, for him to come out, public, and say, I didn't, agree, because you will hardly ever hear any driver say that they don't agree with their crew chief, on
a pick call,
on a public stage like that. They'll always tell them afterwards, hey, I didn't agree with it, or I didn't like this, I didn't like that, but you'll never hear him do it the way Chase did it.
Yeah, well, I think Chase had a little bit of confidence in saying it on the public stage like that because he had won the race, so obviously it was the right pit call. It was a chance to kind of give a pat to his crew chief as well and say, job well done. Even though I didn't agree with you, it was a job well done because it actually won us the race. So that was really good. Anything else in the Camping World Truck Series that was kind of a highlight for you?
Sharon, just kind of that, seeing, Noah Gregson finish fourth, the two KBM trucks,
mm-hmm.
Finished third and fourth, a lot of new faces out there, a lot of old faces, everybody's, struggling, try to get the wins, and make a name for themselves, just the youth that's running the series now.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say, one of the highlights for me was I've got a couple here, but just seeing Ross Chastain racing a truck. It's good to see him, and not only racing in the truck series, but to see him doing well in the truck series with his seventh place finish. I'd like to see Ross Chastain race more Camping World Truck Series events. And then Ryan Truex, I thought he had a great run as well with a top 10 finish. And then what about like Brett Moffitt? Coming home with a sixth-place finish with his Toyota.
Yeah, all those were good, seeing them all. Reagan Smith, even, jumping into a truck, starting to see more and more. You're starting to see more and more, more and more drivers, jumping into the trucks, whether it be for the experience or, I know a lot of them, they're trying to get that seat time, the run on the track, the day before, the cup starts, which they've done in the past. So, there's a lot of little things, that go along with it.
I want to get your thoughts too, Sal, on a comment, and that kind of ties into, I think, this next topic. The Kyle Larson made a comment that he'd like to see more of the NASCAR stars go back to the roots and race at some of the local short tracks. We know there's a lot of them that do that. When you think about Tony Stewart and Casey Kane, Kyle Larson, they all do that. What are your thoughts about that? He thinks that's part of why we've lost some of the grassroots of racing.
It is, and it isn't. You know what? It's because he can do it. He's young. You got to remember, a lot of these drivers are older. They have families. The family, it's bad enough they got to put up with 36 weeks on the road, during the regular season, and then during the off weekends, do they really want to go race? During the week, middle of the week, they're tired. There's a lot of commitments that the fans don't realize they have. It's not only time in the shop, to prepare for the Sunday race or Saturday night race. But there's sponsor commitments, that they have to do, photo shoots, spend time on the TV, on the radio, and it fills up, so when you're talking about guys like the age of Kenseth, some of the older drivers, it's tough. I mean, they're kind of set in their ways with running, a Saturday night or Sunday race, And then, a lot of them have families now, So, it's not easy, to say, like Kyle Larson, I'll just pack up my little boy, and my wife, or else they'll stay home and I'll just go run a race and then fly back home.
I think you bring up a great point, Sal.
And I think a lot of them are thinking in the Carl Edwards, in the Carl Edwards thing too, you know, is that, hey, you know what, you know, they see the injuries that's happening out there. You know, there's a lot of injuries lately. You know, we've had a couple deaths, you know, in cars this past week, you know, and they're looking at that, you know, saying, you know, is it worth it?
Yeah, I do agree, Sal. I think that you're bringing up some great points. And I think those are all reasons why we've gotten away from that type of thing. You know, back in the day, you had drivers that were able to go to their local short track and race. But there's a lot of other commitments that they didn't have that they do have now. And you brought up those points very well. And I do think that, you know, Kyle Larson makes a good point, though, too, in that, you know, it would help to have some of the stars at some of the local short tracks. And we're not talking about every week like Kyle Larson does. But once in a while, get out there and get out to the local short track and make an appearance would be big for the short tracks across the country. So I thought he brought up a good point.
Yeah, it's always a good point, you know, when they bring stuff up, you know, and they, especially when they're young, you know what, it's funny because you don't see the Dillons doing stuff like that.
Exactly, but again, that's Kyle's point, you know, is that we don't see some of the drivers doing that. So we'll see how the drivers respond to it. I'm sure we'll hear other feedback as the story continues to turn, as they say. And upcoming next, Sal, we have an ARCA Racing Series driver coming to join us. The ARCA Racing Series is getting back to the track this weekend at Fairground Speedway in Nashville for the Music City 200. I think that's one of the best trophies that is out there, is the jukebox that they win when they win that race. But he's going to help us preview that event. So it should be an interesting conversation with Gus Dean.
Is he on already?
No, he's not here yet.
Oh,
I'm
thought you said he was already here.
For him. No.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be good to see ARCA Racing back in action this weekend, right?
Yeah, it will. And actually, Riley Herbst will be back out there again this weekend too. He that's the reason he missed the race at Kern and Irwindale, was because he was scheduled to run the four races with Bill McAnally Racing, and the reason he didn't make it was because of he was out testing, you know, to make his ARCA debut. So he'll be making his ARCA debut this weekend as well.
Right. So that'll all be good to watch. Now, one of the things that we'll talk about with Gus Dean is that he did some testing with Wintron Racing in his car for his number 32 team, and they got shut down with some inclement weather, but they did learn enough that I think it gave them a lot of confidence coming into the race this weekend. So it's good when they get a chance to do some testing ahead of time. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, because coincidentally, there's the new repave at Texas Motor Speedway. And again, I want to talk about that later. But the drivers aren't getting a test session. So it kind of shows how important these test sessions are for a lot of these drivers.
Oh, yeah, they are important. You talk to them, and then, you know, even in, you know, in the lower series, you know, K&N West and East series, you know, they give them,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the end of season, they give them, you know, two nights, you know, they have to pay for it themselves, you know, so usually what they do is they rent the track. They all get together and they pitch in, they rent the track, you know, and then they, you know, they go out and they test. That happened, actually, Kern, we got rained out Wednesday night. So NASCAR opened up the track Wednesday morning at 8 and let them practice for 2.5 hours until 10:30. And then that's when NASCAR came in. But there was no NASCAR officials there during that time.
Okay.
During the time of the testing. So they didn't have to go through tech or anything.
Right. Well, Gus Dean is going to be joining us here momentarily from the ARCA Racing Series, and they're going to be racing this weekend at, again, the Fairground Speedway in Nashville. So, you know, you mentioned a lot of some of the other drivers that are going to be racing there, and we've talked about how it's a pretty cool trophy that these guys get. I just want to tell fans real quick before Gus gets here that they'll be able to watch the ARCA Racing Series on MAV TV this weekend. And then ARCA Racing also provides live timing and scoring, and they also have a chat available for race fans during the race. So it's pretty cool. But Gus Dean is here now, and we're ready to talk with him about the Music City 200 that's going to be taking place this weekend, again, at the Fairground Speedway in Nashville in the ARCA Racing Series. And, Gus, you're racing with Wintron Racing this weekend, and I bet you're really looking forward to the race after testing there last month.
We really are. Thank you for having me on, by the way. We had a great test the other
day. Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, but your voice is coming through rather light.
How about now? Is that any better?
Oh, that's much better. Thank you.
Yes,
let's try that again.
But we are really looking forward to the race at Nashville. We had a pretty successful test, you know, a few days ago when we went with the 32 pre-racing Toyota. We worked out a few bugs. We had some slight brake issues and some track clearance problems. But, you know, I got an awesome crew chief on top of the box, Mr. Todd Myers. And he's a pleasure to work with. He's an awesome crew chief. And I can't wait to get a few more races under our belt as far as our relationship goes. But I know the cars are fast, and I know they're capable of winning.
Okay. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about that, too, because it does seem like you've got a lot of confidence in your crew chief. And I wanted you to kind of elaborate a little bit more about that relationship with your crew chief. Is this a new relationship you're developing, or have you been working with Todd Myers for a while now?
Well, as far as, you know, actual on-track experience with Todd as my crew chief, we really don't have that much. We had Kansas last year, you know, at the season finale, and then we had Daytona, the season opener, this year. But, you know, I've spent a lot of time with him in the shop with Mr. Todd and everybody over there at Wintron. And, you know, I think we've developed a pretty strong driver-crew chief relationship. And, you know, our communication is great, in my opinion. And I think that's gonna translate to some success this year in the ARCA Racing Series.
Right. And I know your team owner also mentioned that you're spending time at the track. Kevin Sawinski talked about how much, not at the track, but at the race shop with your team, and he feels like that's a big motivator for your team as well. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I love being over there at the shop with the guys. You know, we have a lot of fun, and it gives me the chance to, you know, get to know everybody a little bit better. You really don't get to know a person at the racetrack because everybody's got one focus in mind, but when you're at the shop and everybody's kind of relaxed, you really build those relationships. And that's, you know, that's the primary goal. I have a blast every time I go over there. You know, I was over there earlier today. We did a little iRacing. I was messing around with Mr. Todd. You know, it's just a big family environment over at Wintron Racing, and I love it. It fits me perfectly, I think. And it's definitely something that I look forward to building on all year long.
Absolutely. Now, Gus, we also have with us the co-host, Sal Segala. So I'm going to pass the baton over to him. I know he has questions for you, too.
Hey, Gus, first of all, Gus, it's got to be pretty exciting, you know, this weekend's, you know, starting to come up, you and Sharon had mentioned, you know, about the, you know, not being able to get, you know, all the testing that you needed. So without all that, how do you prepare, you know, for a race of this magnitude?
Well, you know, it's the main thing is you got to have confidence in your equipment and confidence in your team. And I definitely have both of those. you know, we didn't get quite as much test time as we would have liked, but we did work out some bugs that you know, is imperative that we got this worked out before we go back for the race, which we have. So that was definitely invaluable as far as the test session goes. You know, Nashville's a tricky place. It's a little bit older. It's a little bit more out, wore out, excuse me. It's got definitely got some unique bumps and twists, but you know, I have a little bit of a short track experience in these heavier cars. You know, I ran Pro Cup for a few years before it turned over to the cars late model series. So you know, I think that's helped me prepare for that as well. iRacing actually doesn't have the Nashville Fairgrounds in their selection, so that's, you know, normally we would go on iRacing and try to get as many laps in as we can. But as far as that goes, the best I can do is watch as much in-car footage as I can get a hold of, and really just, you know, go there and have the utmost confidence, which I do, in my equipment and my team, and it'll all play out just fine.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned iRacing, because that's my next question. You know, we've talked to a lot of drivers, you know, and it seems like a lot of them are really, really, you know, putting a lot of time in behind the seat, you know, and iRacing. I myself have never been behind the wheel or seen it, but is it really that? I mean, I know there's nothing as close as actually getting out on the track, but is it really that close to actually being there?
Well, it's the closest available tool that we have. You know, it is definitely the closest video animated racing simulator that you can get a hold of. You know, obviously, whenever you're playing on a computer, it's not going to quite give you that same feel as being out there on the track. But, you know, most of the, you know, I mean, some people use them. Most of the PlayStation games and stuff like that, they have the premier sprint car, or excuse me, Monster Energy Cup Series tracks. But they really don't have some of the shorter tracks and some of the hometown NASCAR tracks that we'll be running at, you know, like the Nashville Fairgrounds. So, you know, it's, even though it's not exactly the same, it's definitely better than the alternative. And it kind of gives you that opportunity to be behind the wheel as far and actually control the car and kind of drive around, versus when we just study in-car footage, you know, we're not in control of the car on the screen. We're just really watching what previous drivers have done. So it's definitely different than being there in person, but it's an invaluable tool, in my opinion, to get prepared for these racetracks, especially the places that we don't have a lot of experience at.
You know, and you know, going to the track, you know, it's, you know, watching practice, you know, and, you know, some of the different things that the drivers do. You know, there are some drivers, you know, they'll go out there for, you know, a couple laps and come back in and go on a couple more laps, and then that's it, then their day is done. And then you see the ones, you know, that, you know, they're constantly going in and out, going in and out, going in and out. Now, for the fans that don't really know what is involved in testing, you know, why some of the drivers do that, can you kind of enlighten us a little bit on that?
Well, you know, in my opinion, as a driver, it's our job to get acclimated to the track as quickly as possible. You know, whenever we go testing, that initial first run is what we call the shakedown, and that's really just to check over your equipment, make sure, you know, everything is up to snuff. You're not going to be dragging the track too hard. Everything is responding the way it should be, and that really gives the driver the opportunity to get out there on the track and get acclimated. You know, we as drivers, we really can't take all day to get acclimated to the track. That's something that we have to figure out and understand fairly quickly. And then the rest of the day can be more focused on the actual setup of the race car, which is the main purpose of testing. But, you know, I mean, obviously we can make tweaks with our line throughout the day, but as far as a baseline for where we need to be, that's something that we have to understand and pick up on fairly quickly when we go to these tracks.
Okay, thanks for that. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon.
Okay. Now, I wanted to just kind of point out the fact that you've raced at Nashville before. This is a track that you've raced at in super late models. And do you think that experience is going to translate into the ARCA racing series for you and give you a little bit of an advantage?
Well, you know, the super late models obviously are going to drive a lot differently and run a completely different line than than our green Toyota. But it's something. It's one of those things where having experience being on the track and knowing where the bumps are and stuff like that, you know, even though the line's not the same, your throttle pickup's not the same, your braking isn't the same, just knowing what to expect before we get out there, that gives me a slight advantage, I think, which is what I got from the super late models. But in my opinion, one way it can hurt you is you get accustomed to certain lines and certain braking points and throttle pickups in a super late model that don't really translate to the ARCA car, and sometimes that causes you to overdrive these heavier race cars. So that's something that I'll definitely have to keep in check when I go back with a 32-degree Toyota. But I think that's something that I'll be able to adjust and acclimate to fairly quickly, which, you know, obviously I think the test the other day definitely helped with that. So in my opinion, it is definitely an advantage to have been there before and just kind of know what to expect as far as the track goes throughout the race.
Okay, that's great. Now, also, I know your race at Daytona wasn't everything you expected, but now you're going to a track that you're familiar with at Nashville, and I'm just wondering what your expectations are for heading into Nashville this weekend. Is it to get a top 10? Is it to go out there and win the race? Where are you at with that?
Well, you know, I definitely feel like the 32-degree Toyota Camry is capable of winning the race, hands down. You know, I feel like the equipment is top-notch, and I feel like it's going to be one of the faster race cars there this weekend. You know, Daytona was a little bit of a disappointment, but it's definitely an easier feeling knowing that I have the full support of everybody with pre-cooling products. They've really helped my dreams come true this year with a full season in ARCA. So that, you know, obviously it wasn't the run that we wanted at Daytona, but I know that we have the rest of the season to compensate for that. And, you know, everybody at Gree has just been so supportive through the whole process. And I'm really excited about going to these other tracks and hopefully starting at Nashville and getting the Gree Toyota in victory lane and, you know, really making everybody at Gree Cooling Products and Cab Installers proud.
Okay. And you bring up a really good point. You know, you've got the whole season to kind of rebound from Daytona. And that's really great. But getting a rebound quickly at Nashville, I think, would be really big for your team. And sponsors are really, really important. So talk about Gree's involvement in the sport and what it means to you and your race team.
Well, it's the absolute center point of my racing career. It's we couldn't do any of this without Gree Cooling Products. They really gave me my second chance after last year's Daytona race, which was eerily similar to this year's Daytona race. But they believed in me enough to give me another shot, and we came back for our second ARCA race at Talladega and ended up winning. So that's kind of what we said after the incident there at Daytona. The wrecks were almost identical, and last year we won Talladega. So hopefully that's going to translate into winning this year after that disappointing finish at Daytona. But, you know, it's disappointing, but it's definitely not an obstacle that we can't overcome, especially with the great team I'm working with this year and the support from Gree. You know, I really feel like we have a shot at the championship this year. I felt that way since before the season started, but before the Daytona test, and I still feel that way. The outcome of Daytona really hasn't wavered my confidence in this team and this year's championship effort.
Yeah, I think that's great, Gus, and it sounds like there's a lot of confidence going into Nashville. I'm going to hand the baton back over to Sal in case he has some more questions he wants to ask.
Gus, what's the biggest transition going from, you know, from a super late to ARCA, you know, with the exception, you know, of course the races are longer, you know, and the pit stops?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, I ran a few years in the Pro Cup Series, which is, you know, a similar race car to the ARCA cars. They're heavier, you know, they behave in a lot of the same ways. And I really think that's helped with the transition from super late models to ARCA cars. as far as me being able to transition pretty quickly. But the main difference in the two is the weight. You know, with the super late models, we're almost 1,000 pounds lighter. So going off into the corner, it's a lot easier to stop. We have a wider tire, so there's a lot more grip through the center of the corner, and we can lay a lot more power down coming back out of the corner because of that wide tire and because of the shortness of the races. We don't have to worry about tire conservation as much as we will in these ARCA cars with these narrower tires. So that's the main transition, I think, from the two race cars. But like I said, the past experience I've had in these bigger cars has definitely made that transition a lot easier.
You know, and actually, you know, when you look at the two series, you know, and you look at the talent, you know, that's in the ARCA series, you know, there's a ton of talent. But you know what a lot of fans don't realize is that, you know, when you're running these super lates, you know, some of these drivers that have just as much or even more talent. The only thing is that they don't have the money, to be able to afford, you know, to drive in one of the bigger series.
Definitely. You know, super late models is a great stepping stone to furthering your racing career. And beyond that, it's just a great learning opportunity to build your skills with car control and car balance through the corner. But, you know, I love the ARCA Racing Series. It's a very big family atmosphere in the ARCA Racing Series and very affordable for, you know, the tracks that we get to go to, you know, like Daytona, Talladega, and then a lot of the other premier racetracks that we'll be at this year. So even though it's a little bit more expensive than the super late models, I feel like it's definitely a very quintessential series in building your career and building your skill set on climbing the ladder forward to the rest of your career.
You know what? And I just want to say, good luck this coming up weekend. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon.
Okay, Gus. I want to get back to Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway and your experience there. If as we kind of preview that for race fans, what would you tell race fans to watch for this weekend at Nashville?
I think a lot of the main point that's going to come into play is pit strategies. You know, these general tires that we're running on are great, durable tires. You know, they're some of the best tires I've ever raced on. However, they're not, they're not invincible. So it's definitely up to the drivers to be able to conserve the tire for the crew chief's pit strategy. Some may be pitting early, some may be pitting late. You know, tire conservation and planning as far as the pit strategy goes is definitely going to be a key factor, especially at these tracks like Nashville. You know, Nashville's, like I said, the asphalt's a lot older and it eats up these tires a little bit quicker. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a strategy game played with these general tires.
Okay, I think that's great advice for fans to keep their eye this weekend. As I mentioned earlier, it's going to be televised on MAV-TV this weekend, and the ARCA Racing Series race will start, I think, 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern time? It's starting at 8 p.m. Central time, so that's 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then fans can also follow along at ArcaRacing.com with the live timing and scoring and the chat feature. Before you go, I want to make sure that I give you an opportunity to shout any other team members. We like to kind of spotlight those guys behind the scenes that are supporting you as you go to the racetrack on the weekend. So is there anybody else that you want to make sure you shout out here, Gus?
Oh, you know, just the amazing effort that my crew chief, Mr. Todd Myers, and the owner, Kevin Selinsky, and everybody at Wintron has put into these race cars. You know, to be able to go to the track with the confidence in your equipment that I have is a very good feeling. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the Nashville race and every race after that. You know, I really think that everybody at Wintron has put forth the effort. I'm going to put forth the best effort that I can. And you know, obviously, everybody at GREET has been absolutely invaluable to this effort. So I'm really excited about moving forward through the rest of the season with this Lintron Racing team and these Cree Cooling Products Toyota Camry.
Okay, that's fantastic. And also, how can fans follow you on social media, you and Lintron Racing?
I am on both Instagram and Twitter at Gus Dean, and Facebook will be Gus Dean Racing. Wintron is on Twitter at Wintron Racing and on Facebook as well at Wintron Racing fan page.
Okay, well, we wish you the best at Nashville this weekend, and it's going to be great to see ARCA Racing back in action. We always enjoy the racing that takes place in that series. And thank you so much for bringing up some great points about your racing this weekend and as well as racing at Nashville. We really appreciate you being here. And I'll tell you what, I hope we always have a place for winners in the ARCA Racing Series, the K&M Pro Series, and so forth. So we hope you get a win, and we have you back on Monday night in our winner's circle.
Absolutely. I hope so, too. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, Gus. Take care and enjoy the weekend, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, folks, that was Gus Dean from Wintron Racing. He's sponsored by Gree Racing, and they're really big in the ARCA Racing Series. Gus Dean gave us a lot of really great things to look forward to watching this weekend. In the Music City 200, I think it's one of the very best trophies a driver can get. In racing, they earn a jukebox when they win that race, Sal. We've got a lot to look forward to in the ARCA Racing Series at Nashville.
Oh yeah, we do. We have a whole lot to look forward to this weekend, and especially like you said, you know, one of the nicer trophies, you know, in the series.
It really is. And, you know, with the ARCA Racing Series, as we know, has been taking a break since the season opener at Daytona. So it's just going to be glad to see – it's going to be a good feeling to see that series get back into action with their racing. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be, you know, a lot of good action and, you know, and see him back on the track again, you know, after, you know – It seems like, I don't know, like even when the truck series took its you know, its little hiatus, you know, you look forward to seeing these series come back because, you know, it's going to be some good racing and the drivers are hungry to get back behind the wheel.
Absolutely. And we had Austin Theriault, who won the Daytona race in the season opener. He's right now in first place, Terry Jones second. Shane Lee is third. Tom Hessert, who was a big contender last year, came in fourth. Dalton Sargent, we've certainly had him on the show along with Tom Hessert. And then we also had, they were fourth and fifth. Brett Holmes, who we had on to kind of help us preview Daytona, is sixth in the series points. I know he's looking to contend for a championship this year. Followed by Ricky Sanders and then Kyle Weatherman, who we've talked to, Clint King we've talked to in ninth, and then Kaz Grala, we've also had him on the show, in tenth. But there's going to be a shakeup in those point standings, I think, after this second race at Nashville that's going to be taking place this weekend.
Yeah, you know what, and you always want to see a shakeup. You just don't want to see a driver go out, you know, win every race and, you know, kind of dominate. You know, you want to see things get shaken up and, you know what? It's going to be like you said, you know, good race and a good, you know, a lot of camaraderie out there and a lot of action.
A lot of action. Now, Austin Theriault's going to be back, but a lot of those other drivers I mentioned might not be racing this weekend. We've got Gus Dean, of course, is going to be there. Brett Holmes is going to be there. You mentioned Riley Herbst. But a lot of the drivers that I mentioned in that top 10 are not necessarily going to be racing this weekend. So Dalton Sargeant is going to be in the event. So I think there's going to be a huge shakeup in those point standings when all is said and done at Fairground Speedway Nashville. But Sal, let's go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Hold on. Plus, you got Dane Smith. Yeah, plus you got Dane Smith who's coming back too. He couldn't race Daytona because he's underage, so Noah Gregson sat in for him. But yeah, Zane Smith will be back behind the wheel this weekend too. So we're getting a lot of good drivers back, and you know a lot of hungry rusty drivers.
Absolutely. You got Christian Eckes, Raphael Lessard, who races with a lot with David Gilliland Racing. He's racing with Venturini this weekend. And the one that you just mentioned a couple minutes ago, Zane Smith, all racing with Venturini Motorsports. And we know how big that organization is in the ARCA Racing Series. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. Michael Lira is going to be behind the wheel again. It's good to see him back into racing in the ARCA Racing Series. And Bobby Gerhart, who's always a fan favorite in ARCA Racing, it's good to see him on the track this weekend as well. So A.J. Fike from Galesburg, he's going to be racing this weekend. He was the first one on the entry list, according to ARCAracing.com. So I think it's going to be an interesting race, no doubt. But let's go ahead and get back to talking about the Sprint Cup Series race that took place. There's a lot of interesting conversation, and I alluded to one of those conversations a little bit earlier when I said we'll talk about that later and help refresh my mindset on what that was, because we were talking a little bit earlier, and I didn't want to get into it at that point because we didn't have time to talk about it. But the whole idea, I guess the part of it is the stage racing, which we've kind of touched on already. But there's also the whole idea of strategy and the strategy plays on the racetrack. And how it's kind of changed the strategy throughout the race.
It's gonna continue, you know, throughout the rest of the season. You know, you're gonna see a lot of different. You know, I mean, we've already seen it kind of take place with the Stenhouse, you know, Busch thing, you know. Most drivers would have just, you know, I mean, you know, I, there, but, you know, man, my tongue's all twisted now. But, yeah, there's going to have to be some tweaks in order for it to, you know, work out, you know, right for everybody involved, not just for one or two drivers, but for, you know, all the drivers involved.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think that, you know, my mind's gone blank on what that topic was all of a sudden, but I know we'll come back to it. But there were a lot of things that happened in that camp, in that Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race on Sunday that really illustrates how racing has changed because of the stage racing. You mentioned the Ricky Stenhouse Jr. piece. And I saw, this was absolutely astounding. It looked like bumper cars out there on the track. Jimmy Johnson they were all racing to be in the top 10, and Jimmy Johnson was in the middle of four cars, and they were all bumping and banging off of each other. I don't know if you saw that on the replays that they played of that, Sal, but there's really a sense of urgency for these drivers when they're on the track. And the bumping and banging at Martinsville Speedway is pretty much what it's all about for short track racing. But a lot of drivers really suffered from that too.
Oh yeah. You're going to take your hits. You're going to give them, you know, and of course, you know, someone's going to come out not happy with the outcome, or, you know, I don't like the way he did this, or I don't like the way he did that, you know what, and, you know, there's always going to be that part of the spectrum.
Absolutely, but I think part of it is the damage, the 5 minute clock on the damage to cars. That's been a huge impact to some of these drivers who can't get back on the track because they can't get the car repaired in that 5 minute time frame. We talked a little bit about this last week, but I want to kind of revisit that subject because there are some advantages to that 5 minute timer on those cars as well, especially at a track like Martinsville.
Yeah, you know, I kind of think that they, because of the fact that, you know what, Martinsville and once we get to Bristol and Richmond, you know, where Arrowly isn't really going to make, yeah, sure, it's going to make a difference, but it's not going to make that much of a difference. And I think that 5 minute clock is, I think that's where we're really going to see a lot, we're going to lose a lot of, hopefully we don't, but we might see it, you know, lose a lot of cars. And I think, you know, I think that that might be one of the tweaks, you know, is that, you know, I mean, these cars bump and bang, and, you know, if they take the front end off, they're still just as, almost just as fast, you know, and they're competitive.
Absolutely. And a good example of that, Sal, to the point that you're making, is Daniel Suarez. He really didn't have a chance of winning the race. He was laps down, but he came out there without a hood, without wheel covers, but he was out there racing and giving everything he had because aerodynamics are not as important as they are at a track like Martins at Daytona. They're not as important at Martinsville.
No, they're not. But you know, the points are important, especially when you're running for Rookie of the Year. You know, and that's where the points really matter. And you know, does NASCAR, you know, say, hey, you know what? Since you know, you really can't say, you know, let's see, we got five cars running for Rookie of the Year, so we're going to go in and not let them have a 5 minute clock. We're going to let them come out if they want. You can't do that without letting everyone else, because then everyone else complains and says, hey, we're still running for a championship. You know, mm-hmm. so you you really can't make that exception. You know, but you know, eventually down the line, you know, there's going to have to be some kind of a tweak done, you know, to where, you know, they, you know, to where it'll, you know, it'll be beneficial, you know, for, you know, for everybody involved.
Okay. Well, let me kind of, that's a great point, and I guess we'll wait and see if NASCAR does make a modification to that. But I think they're going to let it kind of play out maybe a little bit more. We have seen drivers be a little more contentious, if you will, on the track with the stage racing. And that's one of the things that creates drama for race fans. And we know race fans like the drama at the track. And Ricky Stenhouse, I guess, is one of the things that created that drama. And the points is what that really is all about, because Kyle Busch is looking at it from the perspective that he wants to get those stage points, and one, those stage points for the being in the top 10. And one point can be a huge difference when it comes to the playoffs for these drivers. We've seen drivers like Tony Stewart and Carl Edwards actually tie for points, and you know, the only difference was the race win that made the difference for Tony Stewart getting that championship that year. But we've seen that play out over and over again, and drivers are highly in tune to that, and I'd say Kyle Busch is definitely in tune to that. I think that's going to play into more drama as we continue throughout the season. We're seeing drama very early in the season this year. I think the drama is going to intensify as we continue to play through these races in the regular season.
Yeah, it is. It's gonna go up a few notches, especially towards the end of the season. You know, when points are, you know, going to be really important. You know, right now, you know, it's still kind of early. You know what? You know, a lot of me, you know, feel, hey, you know, we can make it up here, we can make it up there. But once the end of the season starts to roll around, you know, and you start looking, you know, where you're at in points. You know what? And you know, are you the one on the bubble, you know, or, you know, are you 10, 15 points out? Then you start looking back, you know, at some of the races, you know, where it makes a difference. You know, then you start wondering if I'd had a better finish there, if I could have, you know, it might be Kyle Busch, might be if I could have won that stage, if Ricky wouldn't have played so rough, you know, I could have won that stage and I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now.
That's true. You know, when you, I really think about drivers, Kyle Larson, I think, is one of the drivers who has the most stage points at this stage of the game. And you've got other drivers like Jimmy Johnson from Hendrick Motorsports, who you would expect to be racing better at this early in the season. And the Joe Gibbs Racing drivers who did so well last year, they haven't really produced some of the results that they would expect at this stage of the racing as well. And I think Kyle Busch is putting kind of an emphasis on why those playoff points are so important. There's been a lot of discussion about whether or not we should be worried about Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing and their lack of running for those stage points at this stage of the game. What are your thoughts there, Sal?
I don't know. I don't think there's, you know what, each team has their strategy. Each team knows they're going to do what they want to do. And you know what, and, you know, to try to look into the future and say, you know, possibly this, possibly that, you know, I just rather wait till the end of the season, you know, and see how they, you know, or once the middle of the season comes, you know, and they start realizing, you know, how important they are or maybe not how important they are, you know, maybe, you know, like a lot of drivers said, you know, we're more, you know, worried about finishing the race. You know,
right?
But again,
talking about the stage points,
yeah,
and they're losing
stage
points.
Yeah, but do you put your car at risk for that stage point? You know, that's going to be the
absolutely.
Question.
Absolutely.
You know,
and I kind of see what your point is. But as an analyst of the sport an observer on the outside looking in, it's hard for us to know exactly what's going on, and I get your point in that regard. But in looking at the fact that Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing haven't really produced in an environment where these playoff points seem to be of real importance, not just at the beginning of the season, but in the middle and at the end of the season, as well as throughout the playoffs. It makes you wonder what might be going on there. Are they testing? Are they, you know, and I know it's all speculation, Sal. It's hard to say exactly what it is. But I just thought you might have something to offer there as far as insight as where they might be coming
you know,
from.
They might, Hendrick might be, you know, instead, you know, we know they do it at the end of the season, but maybe now they're doing it at the beginning of the season. You know, instead of waiting until the end, you know, do all their testing, maybe they're doing it now, you know, to get it out of the way, you know, and, you know, and they feel more comfortable, you know. I mean, you know, a lot of things have changed, you know.
That's very true. A lot of things have changed, and I suspect that part of the reason that might be happening is a learning curve. When you think about Joe Gibbs Racing and how hotly they contested for a championship in the Chase last year, and the same thing with Jimmy Johnson, he ended up being the champion in last year's championship chase. It could be that they're a little bit behind on the whole learning curve with those changes that you brought up. It's just a matter of time before they catch up and they're in there contesting for those playoff points.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's just hard to say what's goes on in the shop, you know, what's talked about, you know, strategies, you know, and different things, you know, and you know, to try and think, you know, what these guys are going to pay millions of dollars for, you know, it's
absolutely.
You
it's
know,
just part of the discussion, and I wanted to bring you
into
that.
Oh, no. I know that. I'm just, you know, it's just, you know, I don't know.
Okay, well, let's do this, Sal. I do have some post-race audio from Brad Keselowski, Paul Wolf, and Roger Penske. Let's get their thoughts after they won that Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series race at Martinsville this weekend. Again, that win did not come easy for that organization or for Brad Keselowski. He had to really work for it because there were a number of drivers that had really strong race cars. So let's listen to their post-race comments, and we'll talk on the other side of that, Sal.
All right.
Attention here in the media center. We will continue on with today's Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series post-race media availability for the STP 500. And we are joined by today's race-winning crew chief, Paul Wolf, and winning team owner, Roger Penske. We'll start with you, Paul. That two-car has found victory lane before with a different driver, but now having Brad Keselowski behind the wheel in victory lane, it has to be something sweet for you and the team.
Yeah, absolutely. This is such a neat racetrack, and we've worked so hard here the last few years. We've been so close, you know, contended, but haven't been able to break through. And, gosh, the guys back at the shop continue every time we come here to build a little better race car, and we've worked really hard on this. And what a relief to finally be able to get that first one here. In over 10 years, and I don't know, I think at the driver's meeting today, it was like this is the 70th anniversary or something for the Speedway, so special day, and Brad just drove a great race. You know, there was a little mistake early with speeding on pit road, but after that, you know, he passed a lot of race cars. We had good pit stops, and just executed all day, thought our strategy was pretty good, and at the end of the race, I was waiting for that caution to fall, and what were we going to do then? It was tough today. The tire that Goodyear brought seemed to hold on more than what we're accustomed to here at Martinsville, so it made those decisions on whether to pit for tires not a little tougher today, and definitely a tough race to win, like I said, and proud of the effort.
Roger, when Joey Logano was in here the other day, he said that the team knew full well about the winless streak for Ford Performance here at Martinsville Speedway. How sweet is it for you to be able to deliver that victory for Ford?
Well, I think they said the last time they won was in 2002, and our last win was with Rusty Wallace in 2004. And to think this was our 1,000th start in NASCAR. So when you put all that together, it's a great day, and certainly – you know, the duel between the 18 and the 2, it was clean. It was good racing. And, you know, I think it was a real credit to Paul for adjusting the cars. The track changed and picked up rubber. And obviously the temperatures went down. Those were things you had to take into consideration. And I didn't see I sat up near the top and watched it. I didn't see Brad make a mistake all day. So it was a flawless effort. And certainly the speeding on pit lane, I wonder why we seem to be the king of that, too. We have to figure that out. But you know, overall, it was something that you can dream of.
Okay, we'll open the floor for questions. We'll start with Bob, and then we'll go to Jacob.
Bob Pockers, ESPN. Roger, you credit Paul with making adjustments. Obviously, you made a choice this week to appeal, and Paul's here. Do you win this race if Paul isn't here?
Listen, I don't know about that. That's a great question. Look, I need him on that box every weekend. I told him I'd pay him to be on that box every weekend, not to be sitting in his motorhome looking at a bunch of monitors. But I think the fact that, you know, that we were able to, really the strategy was that, you know, we take a race off last week and then make the appeal, and I guess we'll be coming back here in a week or so. So it's good to get the experience here on this track, obviously, because we'll be in the chase.
Well, first I'd like to say, you know, that we have a great group of guys, you know, and a lot of support back at the shop. And when something does happen like did at Phoenix, it allows us to still be competitive. You saw how we ran last week at Fontana and overcame the adversity there. But it's tough. It's tough when you're not there. You try to communicate the best with the guys. But there's that little bit that you miss when you're just not sitting on the box and being able to communicate with Brad during the race. So, yeah, it's tough not being there, and that's part of why that's the penalty they hand down because they know it is. But just proud of the effort today. Like I said, it was a good way to come back after not being on the box last week.
Okay, we're gonna go to Jacob, then to Nate, then upstairs to the press box.
Jacob Thielman, Performance Motorsports Network for Roger. This is a special place. I mean, we talk about all the success that you've had over all facets of motorsports over the years, the Indy 500s and everything you've done. But knowing that this was the 1,000th race for you at NASCAR's premier level, and to come here to a track where traditionally you guys admittedly haven't had a ton of success, especially recently, to win the clock, which is one of the most famous trophies in NASCAR. Does that add a little bit of a special moment to this and make, you know, put that up there with some of the big moments in your racing career?
I think when you think about, you know, this track and places like Darlington and North Wilkesboro, you know, these are the tracks that formed the foundation of NASCAR for so many years. And, you know, watching Richard run here and Darrell Waltrip and, you know, certainly when you think about the 21 car, so it's pretty special to think that we could, you know, get in victory lane. We've been close, but never were able to really close the deal. But certainly a great thing for us, and especially with our 1,000th win.
Nate Wren, NBC Sports. I guess for either of you guys, it seemed like until, I guess, what was it, Tuesday or Wednesday, that there was a chance Paul wouldn't be here. What was the thought process in deciding that you would appeal the Phoenix penalty after Paul missed Fontana?
Well, you know, you get the the call that you failed the certain metric, on the car, and we wanted to get the car back and look at it ourselves. And we put data together, and I think that there's a procedure which we were able to go through, and we huddled and decided that we think it's going to be better for everybody if we can state our case, and maybe, you know, overall they'll change some rules so we won't have maybe we'll have a level playing field, because during that process we think about people that won races last year that were able to run across the plate twice or three times. We weren't allowed to do that at all. One time and you're out. So I think that the consistency is really important to me from an officiating perspective. So we'll have a chance to go and talk about our side of the story. It might not be, we might get nothing, but I think at least we can maybe make the sport better.
Was it partially then the timing, Roger, West Coast race, Fontana, that you guys didn't have a chance
right,
to
well, and it was so close, and we said, look, until we get a chance to study this thing, Paul said, you can take off, from California, and then we would decide whether we'd appeal it, so we appealed it, and then we'll have our hearing here in a couple of weeks, which is fine.
Okay, we're going to go next to the press box and then downstairs to Andy.
Lee Spencer, Motorsport.com. Paul Brett said over the last 3 or 4 years that you all have really put a lot into the evolution of the Martinsville car, because he had been so, I guess it wasn't his best track in the past. And I was wondering, was there specific areas that you looked at to improve your program?
I think it's everything, really. We've done a lot just in our car setup, when you talk about shocks and springs and things that we can change at the racetrack. And then overall as a company, when we build our cars from the chassis, the body, the whole process, the engine shop, it's everyone really putting a focus on it and trying to make their area a little bit better. And that's kind of what we've done every time we've come here over the past 2 years. Say we feel like we've brought a little better race car every time, and that's what it takes. And we've been able to put ourselves in position, I guess, the last 3 or 4 times, saying we had a car fast enough to win the race. And we felt like if we just continued to run top fives and put the pressure on that, hopefully we'd get our opportunity here. And today it was.
And for Roger, what do you think it meant to Edsel after not having a Ford in victory lane here since 2002? What kind of a bump it was for them, because Ford Performance seems to have really picked up its game over the last couple of years?
Well, I think the commitment that Ford Performance has made is a byproduct of Edsel's, commitment to the program and, bringing on Stuart Haas and, the partnership that we have with the 21, which is obviously supported, with Ford. I think that it was terrific to have him here, driving the pace car. You couldn't plan anything any better. So, for me, delivering for Ford, was special. And to see the cars and how competitive we've been here since the beginning of the season, makes us feel good about, the next several weeks. But as we all know, win early is great, but you got to win late.
Okay, before we continue on with the questioning here, we are...
Okay, we're 10 minutes in there, and we didn't get a chance to hear from Brad Keselowski, but I thought there were some great points made by Paul Wolf and Roger Penske. They brought up the fact that Ford had not won since, in a decade, and that Brad Keselowski was able to bring that victory home for Ford, and what that meant for Roger Penske and the Ford organization, and what Stuart Haas Racing has meant to Ford and bringing them into the fold this year. Any thoughts there, Sal?
You know, just a lot of good points, you know, made by, you know, Paul and Roger, you know, how important the win was. And, you know, I mean, you know, it was a good win for Brad. I don't think he's ever won at Martinsville, come to think of
That's
it.
Right.
Actually, I had him in my fantasy league this week. I don't even know why I picked him. But I picked him, and I was the only one that picked him in the fantasy league. And I think I picked him because he's been running strong. And I just thought, you know, that he would, you know, this would be his race to win. And so, I mean, of course I'm happy. I mean, I like Brad as a driver anyways. I'm a big Brad fan. Ever since I've, you know, done some media events with him and got to know him pretty well, you know, off the media side. So, and, you know, and a lot of people, they talk about Brad, you know, this and that. But, I mean, look what he did after the race. He went into the stands and gave one of his fans his Monster Energy bottle.
Yeah.
And he celebrated with them. I mean, how many drivers go into the stands to celebrate with the fans? Not only that, but even during the race weekend, after practice, he'll drive around with the case of Miller Lite, and he'll find someone who has his flag, and he goes over there and he gives them a case of beer, takes pictures with them, you know. And, I mean, drivers just don't do that anymore.
And that is so true, and you bring up an excellent point there, Sal, because, you know, I've met Brad Keselowski as well, and he's very, very personable. And, you know, and fans don't know that about him until they've interacted with him. And it was really great to see him. And that kind of goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier about these stars getting themselves to some of the local racetracks. But what that means to fans to have a driver to come up into the stands and celebrate with them is huge. And I thought it was great that Brad did that. Brad has always been kind of on the cutting edge of those kind of things. If you think about what he did with Twitter a few years ago at Daytona, he's in touch. He is a personable person when you get to know him and interact with him. And thank you for bringing that up, because I think that's a really great point.
You know, and he's you know, I mean, he's a contender. He's a hard driver, just like, you know, everybody else is out there, you know. And you know, he eats the same food we eat, you know. And unfortunately, you know, he's a little aggressive on the track. You know what? But I mean, you know, you got
to
thank him for being aggressive. Yeah, you got to thank him for being aggressive on the track. You know what? And being, you know, being beyond, you know what the stereotype, you know, drivers we're seeing these days, you know. You know, they can't be themselves, you know, and Brad's not afraid to. Look when he won his championship, man. That guy was hammered. You know, sure, NASA, I don't think NASCAR is too happy about that.
He was enjoying it.
Oh, he was enjoying it. I think he enjoyed it a little bit too much, to where he was even slurring over the, you know, during his interviews with, but you know what? But that's Brad. I mean, if you've ever done a media event with Brad, you would know that is Brad. I mean, we did one event at Dave and Buster's over here. And he's, before he left, he says, you know what, guys? He said, if you're 21 and over, he said the first, what car? Oh, he said the first 200 Miller Lights I'm buying at the bar. And I mean, there's like, what, 75 people inside? You know,
exactly.
Inside the Dave and Buster's. And it wasn't even a planned event. He decided we were doing it, another event. And he said, he goes, I heard there's a David Buster's. He goes, let's go over there and let's rate it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And like you say, that is Brad Keselowski. And he really is a down-to-earth kind of guy. And he loves interacting with the fans. Now, Sal, we've been talking a little bit about the drama.
Hang on, Sharon. One funny thing happened. And I don't know, because we live in California. We're not allowed to take alcohol. You can't drink alcohol out in the parking lot. And Brad was outside during an interview, and he had two beers with him. And somebody went out there and said, "Hey, dude, if the cops roll up, man, they'll throw you in jail."
So get rid of it.
But yeah, so get rid of it or go back inside. But you know, but either way, it was funny. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to transition here to the race that's coming up at Texas Motor Speedway. A lot of drivers have kind of expressed some concern, and it kind of ties into the whole testing thing, and that's what I wanted to get back to talking about, and I wanted to do it before we ran out of time. The drivers are not getting a chance to test at Texas Motor Speedway before racing there. Practice is going to be more or less their testing session, and it creates a really quick turnaround for these drivers to be able to adapt to the changes that were made at Texas Motor Speedway in January up to just a few days ago or a few weeks ago. What they did out there is they did not only a repay but a reconfiguration over in turns 1 and 2, and they reduced the banking. It's now 20 degrees, and they also widened the race surface in that same area to 80 feet. So they widened it by 20 feet. So the drivers are a little apprehensive going into the racetrack this weekend without having a test session, because usually they get a chance to be invited to the track and test there before they race there. That's a 1.5-mile track. And in the press release that came out from Kyle Busch, or from for Kurt Busch today, Kyle Busch had some blistering comments with regard to that, when he said, "I think the trend in NASCAR is to keep all of us on our toes as much as possible. It seems like the practice sessions here and there, moving things to the next day as a result of weather, to head into Texas with no formal tire test, no official track mapping, it's like let her rip. This is new territory for a sport. I think it shows how much we're having to adapt on the fly. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? It doesn't matter. It's what it is, and it's unique. The way we're headed in there to go 215 miles per hour with no track time." And if you look at fanforracing.com, I've got comments from some of the other drivers and their thoughts about racing at Texas without any testing time. I think it's going to make the race I think there's going to be some drama at Texas as well, Sal.
Well, they're pros. You know, they should be able to adapt. You know, that's why they give them the long test sessions they give them, you know, and sure, you
but
know,
they're
I,
not getting
you know,
the test sessions, Sal.
No, I'm talking about, you know, during just regular testing, not test practice.
Yeah, but
I'm sorry.
They're going. Okay, yeah, they're going to Texas without a test session. They're going to have a practice session, and the crew chiefs are going to have a very quick turnaround to be able to adapt to the track changes that were made there in January and just recently completed. So
that's why they
pay
them the big money. It is. That's why they pay them big money. Now you're going to see what these crew chiefs are all about, because you know what? They're going to go out, run a few laps. They're going to collect some data. They're going to bring the car in, make some adjustments, put them back out there again. You know what? It's going to benefit the fans more than anything, because the fans are going to get to see the cars on the track more than they're normally seeing. Because like I asked Gus earlier during practice, you know, there's some teams that will go out there, you know, they'll run 10, 15 laps and boom, they're done. You know, they're parked for the rest of the practice session. You know, they've already got what they need. You know, and I think this is neat, because now the fans are going to get to see, you know, their drivers out on the track more than what they're used to seeing them.
Well, I think it's interesting that the drivers are going into it with some apprehension, and you hear that. I've got comments from Brad Keselowski, who won at Martinsville. He goes in with some optimism because he's on some momentum, but he also says it's a bit of a wild card. With the new asphalt, nobody knows what to expect. And then Denny Hamlin also had some comments to say, you know, it's really going to be a challenge because nobody knows how the side-by-side racing is going to be impacted with the changes at the track. So that's going to be one of the biggest challenges that they have going into this weekend. And even Kyle Busch had some blistering comments about it, too. It's one of the worst things, he said, you can do at a racetrack is to go in with some of these repaves and not know what to expect. So it's going to be a very short turnaround. You're right. It's going to make it exciting for the fans. But when the drivers are apprehensive about it, there's got to be some concern as well.
You know what Kyle's pissed off about? Because now they're all on an even playing field. All the drivers are on an even playing field. We're all going to a track we haven't raced on. And you know what? And now it's anybody's ball game. You know what? Nobody has data for it, so it means one team is going to have the advantage.
Well, I don't think Kyle's ticked off about that, Sal. I think that he actually made comments at Martinsville this weekend that he thinks the parity in the racing is good for the sport. So I don't think he's upset about that. He thinks the parity in NASCAR racing is a very good thing because it has equalized it a little bit, especially with the stage racing and some of the things that are going on right now. And we brought up earlier that Jimmy Johnson is a little bit behind trying to get up to the learning curve that maybe he lost a little momentum in competing for the championship last year.
Now he's farther behind.
Well, not possibly. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out.
That's great because now it's not all about Jimmy Johnson. You know, it's not the Jimmy Johnson show anymore. Now it's NASCAR, you know. Now it's all the drivers. You know, this is where guys like Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott, these guys, you know, should shine because, when they're racing super late, you know, they're used to going into tracks, pulling into a track they've never been to before, and they get their two practice sessions, one qualifying, and you're racing.
Yeah. Kyle Busch's comments, by the way, Sal, was I think it's probably a good thing. To be honest with you, there needs to be more parity in our sport. There needs to be other teams that have the opportunity to get up there and run well and win races. So I don't think he's ticked off about it. I think he's happy with the parity in the racing. And I think he knows it's a good thing for the sport overall. And I think he's reflected that in his comments from Martinsville. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend is the point that I wanted to bring up and something for fans to be aware of, that there has not been a testing session with the repaving and the reconfiguration that has taken place at that track. It's going to make the racing that much more interesting, I think, this weekend to the point that you made earlier. So with that, Sal, we've kind of gone a little overtime here with our show tonight, and it's kind of a good thing because we've had to close out early a little bit in some of the previous shows here. I think we've had some great discussion tonight, and I want to thank you for your input with some of the topics that we've brought up here tonight. I hope you feel the same about it, and what are you going to be doing this weekend? Are you going to be at the track?
Yeah, Irwindale Speedway, and then I got to make a call and ask my buddy. I was supposed to be shooting Long Beach Grand Prix on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So the magical mystery
that,
tour continues.
And I know you've got a guest lined up for next week. You want to talk a few minutes about that?
Yeah, I got Carlos Vieira lined up for next week. He just won a race in Madeira like 2 weeks ago, and poor guy, Vitano. We're going to get him on today. He was supposed to come on. Some things came up, but we'll talk about his foundations. He's Derek Thorne's teammate this year in the Spirit SRL Tour Series. So,
and he's involved on a sponsorship side as well, right?
Yeah. Well, he sponsors his own cars, and then he's with the Race for Autism and 5150 Energy Drink, which is big out here in California, in Northern California, where he's from. So we'll hear from him, see what he has to say next week.
Okay. And that, of course, is in our NASCAR and race talk on Fan for Racing Radio here every Monday night, starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. And we'll continue to line up more guests for Monday night. I did line up a couple of people potentially for the end of April as well, going into May, and I'm looking forward to, getting a chance to talk to our upcoming guest. So definitely stay tuned to Fan for Racing Radio in these coming weeks. And we also have a person who's interested in maybe helping out with the radio show, so we may be bringing back our NASCAR weekend preview show. So stay tuned for more news there as well, Sal. But I'm glad to see that you're going to be at the racetrack, And I'm really glad to. I always look forward to chatting with you every Monday night here on our Monday night show. So thank you for being there, and thanks again for some great conversation as well.
All right. Cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope you have a great week and an even better race weekend, Sal. We'll look forward to talking to you next Monday night.
All right.
All right. We'll call that
so
a wrap.
We'll see you next week. Okay.
All right. Take care.
All right. Good. Okay. Good night.
Good night.